Hello, I'm Keith Powell, and welcome to the best of Media Network Plus. This edition was broadcast September 14th, 2013. Enjoy.
Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Keith Perron.
Well, hello everyone. It's very nice to have you with us for another edition of the program. Now, from time to time, we like to talk about clandestine radio, because clandestine radio is quite interesting. There's a number of radio stations out there that target places like North Korea, Vietnam, Cambodia, and other hotspots, as you might call them. Now, one part of the world you wouldn't think about targeting would be Malaysia, but, well, there is a station that targets one specific area of Malaysia, Sarawak. The Malaysian government has called this station the Naughty Station. Now, personally, I would take a certain amount of pride if somebody said PCJ was a naughty station, but that's how they've referred to Radio Free Sarawak. The station broadcasts daily on shortwave on 15420 kilohertz.
Selamat bertemu baru Balas Singa Mayuh, yaitu kita perlu mendiangkan siaran Radio Free Sarawak. Dipancar kami dengan gelombang angin pandai SW1542 kHz dari negeri London. Dari itu Balas Singa, 13 dari bulan 8 tahun 2013, ini hari kedua.
That was the opening of Radio Free Sarawak's transmission on 15420 kHz, recorded here in Taiwan. My guest today is Claire Ruthcastle, who started up the station. This is an interesting station that you helped set up. Where did the idea come from, and was this something that you had been planning for a long time, even before you went on air?
It was, to begin with, a concept. You know, the way we are going to get this whole debate across to the communities of Sarawak, how are we going to do it? There's no point trying to produce a newspaper. There's no point trying to get this online. How are we going to reach these people? And the answer that kept coming up in my head and with anyone I ever talked to, well, we need, the only way to get through to people is by the radio. So the next step was, well, is it feasible? Is it possible? I have worked in radio before, but only in a very large organization. And you know, I had no concept of whether it would be possible. But I asked around, and if you want to do something, you usually end up managing to find a way. And we found a way, which was to use shortwave radio, which is now quite widely available.
Now, you said you are using shortwave radio. Did you also look at other delivery means, or did you know that, for example, if you had the program online, would the Malaysian government jam the website?
Well, online wasn't going to do the business for us. I mean, I already had an online blog, which had had an amazing and unexpectedly positive reception from the section of the public that was online, which is quite a big chunk of the Malaysian population. But these are only people who are living in the urban areas. And the people who've been worst affected by many of the issues that I'm concerned about, deforestation, oil palm, environmental destruction, human rights, indigenous rights, these people, of course, were far out in the jungle regions and had no access to online. So online radio, we do run our program online for those who are interested, but we're broadcasting actually in Iban to the interior communities. So shortwave came up as one way of reaching very distant communities from the other side of the world. Obviously, it's the medium to use. It's also cost effective. You know, I started this project with no promise of any money whatsoever. So I was looking for the cheapest option.
The content that you have, I'm really curious about, because I've spoken to people who've organized stations, let's say, that target North Korea, and they have people that work inside North Korea for them or under other very tense situations, and they always run into the problem that you have to sometimes, hide the people that you're working with, and there's always the risk that they could get caught by the authorities. Is this the same situation for you? I mean, Malaysia, of course, is not North Korea, but you must be working under the same kind of difficulties.
Yes, we are. Although, to give Malaysia its due, I mean, I've got a lot of criticisms that I would make about Malaysia's human rights record, but they're not in the same category as North Korea, and they do want the rest of the world to think well of them. So we're not dealing with quite such an appalling regime. On the other hand, you are dealing with a regime that seeks by every means possible to intimidate and negatively affect anybody who is speaking out against Barisan Nasional, the ruling party. So people are very intimidated about, their identities being known, because they think that could affect their lives and their families. And indeed, they could be arrested under a number of laws. There are sedition laws and so forth, emergency legislation that still exists that would enable them to be arrested and put in jail. We are under considerable constraints. Two of my members of staff have come out in the open, and we did that as a judgment call, actually. When Peter John, who was my very first DJ, came out into the open, we were here in London. We had the protection of being operating here in London, and we decided that it would really look too terrible if anything was done against him here. And when he subsequently went back to Kuching in Sarawak, it's really up to the government there whether they want to arrest our now part-time presenter and create an international incident over it, because I think they can be quite confident that I would scream from the rooftops if they moved against Peter or indeed any of my staff. So we've got a bit of a standoff, and so far we're muddling along, even though we've been told that we're completely illegal by the Malaysians.
Let's talk about the audience that you have. We've seen this happen in other countries where governments will confiscate radios. I mean, this recently happened in Zimbabwe. Robert Mugabe's government confiscated shortwave radios because of a number of stations that are broadcasting to Zimbabwe. We've seen the same kind of thing happen in other parts of the world. What about in your situation? Was there at any point you started getting reports that people were getting knocks at the door saying, you have a shortwave radio, what are you listening to? And if you're listening to the station, we'll take your radio away.
Yes, there is an element of that pressure. Already, politicians and their clients, by whom I mean the headmen who are appointed and paid to keep an eye on the longhouse communities, many are speaking out, telling people they shouldn't listen to the radio, disapproving of the radio, saying that it's poisoning minds and telling untruths and so forth. So far, that I think that's done us more harm, good than harm, actually, because it's created an interest.
Right, because usually when that kind of thing happens, people wonder, well, why don't they want us to listen? I have to listen to find out.
Exactly. I think Malaysia has managed to get away with not being such an oppressive society. They've managed to get away with what they want, which is basically stripping Borneo of its natural resources without having to resort to the sorts of extreme violence that you would see in some countries like Zimbabwe. And therefore, you do have a gentler society. And I think there is resistance to actually going in and sort of snatching radios from people, snatching their possessions. But there is definitely a very strong undercurrent of disapproval. You know, it's a standoff. We've got a standoff at the moment, but I'm absolutely determined that we're going to push our right to be heard, and people should be allowed to listen and contribute to our programs. And I think if we stand up for that right and show ourselves to be determined and brave, then the authority, it's a better way of handling the authorities in Malaysia, because, you know, they once they cross the barrier of locking people up and confiscating radios, you know, then really the truth will be out, won't it? The accusations that they're every bit as bad as Zimbabwe will have been proven. So they're trying to avoid doing that at the moment, and I'm just getting on with my job. I mean, what we remind our listeners is that in the recent elections in Malaysia, the ruling party lost. The majority of votes went to the opposition parties. So therefore, we're part of the opposition. We're part of the majority with Radio Free Sarawak. BN, the ruling coalition, are going to have to learn their place in Malaysia these days.
Now, as for the audience, do you also get a big response, not just from that area, but also from Malaysians who are not in the region that you're targeting?
Yes, unintended consequences have been a very interesting part of this project. Obviously, I've been speaking, as I say, our broadcasts are mainly in Iban, which is the interior language or the main interior language. Actually, there are about 43 different languages in Sarawak alone. But that's very much a deliberate gesture towards the native people. And it's not a language that people speak in West Malaysia. However, the very fact that we exist, the very fact that we're doing what we're doing, has created a great deal of interest, I think. And it's also enabled me to platform the issues and to remind people in West Malaysia just how despicable some of the actions of the government of Sarawak have been towards native people. And so we've been getting our message over to the West Malaysian audiences as well. And I think it played into the election result I just mentioned, where the opposition party, in fact, won nearly 10% more of the vote than the ruling party did in West Malaysia.
For yourself, was this something very personal that you wanted to do? I mean, how did you get interested in these the issues that are important to this area?
Well, I was born in Sarawak and spent my very early years there and have the sort of memories that, you know, anyone who grew up somewhere would. But when I went to live the rest of my life in Europe, I guess I had thought and hoped that, independent Sarawak, Malaysia would manage, you know, without me, as it were, and certainly they have. But I got sucked back into involvement in Sarawak when, I've been watching, obviously, with heavy heart at what had been going on there in terms of deforestation, environmental destruction, and the more I looked into it, I realized also dreadful human rights issues. And I went back to visit and learned more and started asking, well, who's publicizing this? Who's criticizing it? Who's opposing what's going on? And who's exposing the evident corruption of the government that's been in power there for the last 50 years? And, more and more the answer came back, well, nobody's doing anything. And eventually I came to the sort of conclusion that, you know, if I didn't speak out, then nobody much else was. And I felt I had a sort of duty, really, to do what I could.
Now, we know, that, of course, that the Malaysian government is not too happy with the station. Has the Malaysian government contacted the British government and said, you have to stop these guys?
Well, I think they'd have got short shrift and quite a loud laugh in their ear if they had. we believe in freedom of speech here and in freedom of opinion. And obviously we believe that opposition parties and critics of governments should be allowed to have their say and be heard. So I don't think the Malaysians complaining that someone was breaking their incredibly draconian press laws would impress the British very much. And I don't think they would be seeking to silence me from here. So I don't think diplomatic channels would have been adopted by the Malaysians. I think we have given them a puzzle to deal with, actually. The reason why I'm doing what I'm doing and the reason why no one's doing it in Sarawak, obviously, is that there are very, very harsh laws against media freedom in Malaysia. I mean, in fact, despite being quite a gentle society in many respects, Malaysia does have one of the most restrictive set of press laws in the world, and freedom of expression is very heavily curtailed. So You know, it is very difficult for anyone to get away with doing what I do out of Malaysia. They would be banged up or told they were breaking licensing rules and so forth.
That's a little strange because you're not using transmitters in the country. You're using transmitters outside the country, which Malaysian authorities have no jurisdiction over.
Well, that's been my answer, hasn't it? That's why I'm giving them a bit of a headache. Local Malaysians would be under pressure either by their nationality, the fact they live in Malaysia, they're subject to the laws of Malaysia, and they're in Malaysia. They're much more easily restricted by Malaysia's very repressive laws. However, with me, they've got a bit of a headache because actually, what law am I breaking? The Home Minister, when sort of informed of my irritating activities, publicly came out and said that he would leave no stone unturned to find a law that I was breaking. Presumably, he's been turning stones over, and as of yet, he hasn't found a law that I'm breaking. In fact, they're the ones who've been breaking laws because they've resorted now to trying to jam my broadcasts, and that breaks the international protocols to which they have signed up. So they're breaking the law at the moment. I'm not.
Now, let's get on to jamming for a moment, because you're not jammed all the time. You're jammed at certain, say, if I can put it this way, sensitive times in Malaysia, like elections.
I'm not sure about that. Every now and again, we have problems with our broadcasts. I think every now and again, they do just come in and shake us about a bit. But yes, it seems to be, you know, Malaysia's had the same government in power now for 50 years. It's the oldest supposedly elected regime in the world. And, you know, they've settled into a way of doing things, and they're a bit lazy in between, I think. And so they, you know, there's a flurry of activity around elections where they rush around knocking everybody off offline, not just me, but anybody, you know, who has an opposition newspaper or whatever. And jamming people. It's not just me that they've been jamming. And then things do tend to go quiet in between those election periods. It seems to be a cycle of doing things, but, you know, we carry on.
Now, the jamming thing, of course, is very interesting because very few countries are capable of jamming. We know the North Koreans do it, the Vietnamese, the Cambodians, the Chinese, the Cubans. The Soviet Union was notorious during the Cold War era, but the Malaysians are not capable of jamming. They don't have the right facilities from it. Do you have a source or you have an idea where the jamming is coming from?
They're not jamming in the way that one thinks of say China might jam. All they're doing is putting another more powerful program out on our wavelength, which of course is highly illegal to do. And anybody who's helping them do that, any professional transmission station or you know, professional in the business of organizing radio broadcasts, is breaking rules to do that. But that's what's been going on. And these rival broadcasts have come at us from different directions over the years. I mean, as I say, we've had different waves of jamming, and you know, we can detect them coming from different places, but that's how they're managing it. They're obviously commissioning someone who's prepared to break the law, who has found a transmission station that is prepared to break the law, who is then you know, broadcasting on our wave band. And you know, we've had all sorts of interesting sounds. We had American gospel music was played you know, across our program back in 2011, but in fact I don't think it had anything to do with the US, that particular jamming.
Now, the audience you're targeting, do they write to you, and what kind of things do they say?
Well, it's more exciting than that, actually. We decided, having established that there were definitely people out there, we decided, well, you know, we don't want to keep talking at them. The whole point of this is that we give the people in the interior a voice, just as much as hearing us. So we decided that we would open a phone line, and we do this. We disguise ourselves as much as we can, but there is a phone line, a Malaysian phone line, that people can ring. And we started that up about 18 months ago now. And the response has just been terrific. We get, you know, a whole lot of phone calls every day from these very remote communities. What it's a mixture of, fascinatingly, is this rather sort of old and defunct technology of shortwave, which has been phased out for most radio broadcasts, with all the penetration that we now have of the hand phone. So even the most remote longhouses in Sarawak, you'll have one or two people in those communities who have a mobile phone, and although they may not themselves be in range, usually they're not, you know, they live down by rivers and, you know, they can't get a signal in their longhouse areas. But what they'll do if they want to talk to us is they'll climb up a hill, you know, they'll walk for 3 or 4 hours to get to a place where they know they can get a signal, and then they'll sit up there until they've got hold of us. And done the interview about their particular problem. And it's wonderful that that's happening.
Now, you've said before that Malaysian government officials have talked about you. Have you been back to Malaysia, and can you go back? Or did you ever go back and they said, no, you can't enter the country?
Well, no, I'm back channels have long told me that I'm on blacklists, both in Malaysia and Sarawak. And in fact, I went back to Sarawak in July of this year because there was a defamation suit against me from one of the people I'd written about in a critical fashion had decided to sue me today in the Sarawak court. And so I went back to Sarawak to state my right, really, to appear to defend myself in the court. And of course, I never got through immigration. They threw me out, which confirmed, you know, what I knew, which is that I'm certainly banned from Sarawak. I've also been told that I'm similarly on the list to be arrested and deported were I to attempt to enter mainland Malaysia. And plenty of critics of the regime in mainland Malaysia have received that treatment. So I suspect that that's correct.
Now, let's talk about, you know, funding, if you can talk about that. Because you said at the beginning you started the station off yourself. Does funding come from people in these communities who maybe now live overseas who donate money to the station? Or do you get money from other sources?
I'm getting increasing amount of money, actually, from that source, which is wonderful. I'm getting some serious support now from some people from Sarawak who've heard about what we're doing, and that money I'm putting into a fund, and we're going to start a radio drive again. We've obviously distributed a lot of radios through the interior, but many communities are still saying they haven't got access to the program. So we'll keep that fundraising going. And there are other issues. There are other issues that sort of money goes to as well. For example, I've got one or two key research projects that I'm looking to develop over the next few months. But fortunately, you know, I rather started this on a wing and a prayer, and fortunately, one or two other key funders have come in to support me who have absolutely no connection whatsoever with Malaysia, but who are concerned about native rights and rainforest issues. So that's enabled us to pay those scary broadcast fees that we get.
Claire, thank you very much for talking to us today.
Thank you.
And I was speaking there with Claire Rucastle from Radio Free Sarawak. If you want more information on the radio station, you can check them out online at www.freeradiosarawak.org. That's www.freeradiosarawak.org. Or you can catch their transmissions on shortwave, and all the details, of course, are at their website. Now, what can we expect propagation-wise over the next 7 days? Here's Dan Hensley to tell us more.
Here's propagation for the week from September 14th to September 20th, 2013. The 10.7 centimeter flux starts out at 110 on September 14th and 15th, down 5 points to 105 September 16th, 100 on September 17th, 105 September 18th, up to 110 on September 19th, continuing an upward trend on September 20th, ending at 115 for the week. A index starts out at 8 on September 14th, down to 5 on September 15th and 16th, September 17th through the 19th, an A-index of 15, ending at 8 on September 20th. The KP index is 3 starting on September 14th, down to 2 on September 15th and 16th. From September 17th to the 19th, a KP index of 4. September 20th, a KP index of 3. This solar cycle looks like it's wrapping up. One sunspot has been observed, and that means we are at an absolute solar minimum. Sunspot 1838 is quiet and poses maybe, possibly, a 1% chance of flaring. Although this means a quiet sun, we will need to play propagation by ear this week. There is a coronal hole from which we will see a solar wind hit Earth around September 14th or 15th. Back to you, Keith.
All right, thank you very much, Dan. For more details on radio propagation this week, you can check out our website, www.pcjmedia.com, and click on Radio Propagation. Now, before we go, if you want to contact us to let us know what you think of the program or have any suggestions or ideas for future shows, do write us. Our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. Once again, mnp@pcjmedia.com. If you want to listen to this program again or past editions, visit our website, www.pcjmedia.com/Media Network Plus. I just want to remind you again that you can catch PCJ Radio International Sundays from 1330 to 1430 UTC on 11835, targeting listeners in Southeast and East Asia. Today we're going to close with singer-songwriter Sixto Rodriguez, otherwise known as Sugar Man, with the song Crucify Your Mind. We'll see you in 7 days' time, 73 and 88 to the ladies.
Was it a huntsman or a player that made you pay the cost, that now assumes relaxed positions and prostitutes your loss? Were you tortured by your own thirst in those pleasures that you seek, that made you Tom the Curious, that makes you James the Weak? And you claim you got something going, something you call unique, but I've seen your self-pity showing as the tears roll down your cheeks. Soon you know I'll leave ya, and I'll never look behind, 'cause I was born for the purpose that crucifies your mind. So convince your mirror, as you've always done before, giving substance to shadows, giving substance evermore. And you assume you got something to offer, secret shiny in you, but how much of you is repetition that you didn't whisper to him too?
We hope you enjoy this special edition of the best of Media Network Plus. For PCJ Radio International, I'm Keith Parent. Thank you for listening, and join us again very soon.